Welcome to The Curly PR, the podcast that's on a mission to restore faith in public relations. I'm Nastya Papandopoulos, a Curly PR manager working for some of the biggest Ukrainian and international brands in the industry. I'm happy to announce that Curly PR is now on NV Podcasts, the platform where you can find best independent Ukrainian podcasts. In today's society, with new stories surrounding us from every direction, it is impossible to avoid influence by the media. Television, radio, newspapers, and the internet affect the way we think and consequently our behavior. Therefore, propaganda, misinformation, and fake news have the potential to polarize public opinion and even subvert our democratic beliefs. My today's guest is the person who is closely related to the media environment, a war correspondent who has been covering the events in conflict zones all over the world for almost 10 years, an Air Force Academy graduate who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and author of the book Why Soldiers Miss War, now lives in Ukraine, and enlightens the West about Ukrainian-Russian war. Drum roll, ladies and gentlemen, Nolan Peterson. Nolan writes for Coffee or Die, has multiple appearances on CNN and Fox News, and recently has shared his expert opinion for Wall Street Journal. He, of all people, knows about propaganda and disinformation. Hi, Nolan.
Hi. Thank you so much for being my guest today. I know that everyone wants to have a piece of you nowadays.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Traditionally, a Curly podcast is held in wonderful locations, and this episode is not an exception. Today, we are recording in the Generator, a brand new co-working space in the heart of Kyiv. The building was constructed in 1932 together with Dynamo Stadium, not far from Maidan, and for decades was used as the meeting place of Kyiv's elite. The walls are decorated with murals of social realism.
How do you like the ambience, Nolan?
Oh, this place is so cool. I think it really represents sort of this post-Soviet rebirth in Ukraine that we're seeing, and this vibe that, you know, a lot of people say that that Kyiv is the new Berlin. And you really get a sense of that here. It's this mix of modern style and culture. And I think it really shows sort of the energy and the enthusiasm among young Ukrainians in particular to join the West and to have a better future for their country.
So Nolan, how do you define propaganda? And can you please share maybe some stories of your life where you saw this propaganda thing?
Before I became a journalist, I was a pilot in the U.S. Air Force for special operations. And, you know, I took part in combat operations around the world. But when I became a journalist, I understood very quickly that my new profession, as somebody who conveys the truth, is just as lethal and just as important to any war as my old profession, where I actually was dropping bombs. And I give you a quick anecdotal example of this. When I first came to Ukraine in 2014, I was following the Ukrainian army as they were taking back ground against Russia's unconventional invasion of the Donbas. And as the Ukrainian army was advancing and taking back territory, I was with them in the town of Slavyansk. And just outside of Slavyansk, there's a village called Semyonovka. And I was there just a couple of days after there had been some very heavy fighting in this little village. And I was walking around with my interpreter at the time. And I was asking the local residents who were there, you know, who did this damage to your home? Mm-hmm. Who destroyed your village? And, you know, a few people had stayed for the fighting, and they had hidden in their basements during the worst of the violence. And people had different answers. Some people said the Ukrainians were responsible for destroying their homes. Some people said it was the Russian side. And at the end of the day, I approached one family, a man his wife and their teenage son, and they're out with a wheelbarrow picking up the pieces of their house, which had been totally destroyed by the artillery. And I asked this family the same question: who did this? Who destroyed your village and your home? And the man looked in my eyes and he said, the American CIA bomber planes. Mm-hmm. Which, okay, obviously the United States is not out carpet bombing the Donbass, much less the fact that the CIA isn't out there bombing the Donbass. And I was really astounded by that answer, because it was like a fantastic answer. It was a fantasy, pure fiction. And so I asked this man, okay, respectfully, why do you think it was the American CIA bomber planes mm-hmm. which did this, which caused this destruction? And he said, because I saw it on the news. And right there, I understood. And this is 2014, mind you, so it was relatively at the beginning of my career as a journalist. But I understood then that information and propaganda is a weapon of war. It distorted this man's interpretation of reality. He was an eyewitness to a battle. And he was able to, that propaganda was so powerful from the Russian side that they were able to twist his mind and to actually change his memories of something he had seen firsthand as an eyewitness. And one of the first things that Russia did in 2014, when they commenced this unconventional invasion of the Donbass, is they destroyed all the TV and radio antennas in eastern Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, they stopped the ability of the Ukrainian government and from the West generally as well, to transmit information into the Donbass. And so people living in those occupied territories in eastern Ukraine were under the shadow of nonstop Russian propaganda. And Russia was telling them that the Ukraine's 2014 pro-democratic revolution, the Maidan revolution or the revolution of dignity, Russia was telling those people in eastern Ukraine that it was a neo-Nazi takeover led by the US CIA to install this government in Kyiv that wanted to oppress Russian-speaking people in eastern Ukraine, which is all a lie, it was all false. But these people living in eastern Ukraine, they had no other information sources other than what was coming from Russia. And so they believed these things initially, and it led them to be afraid. And it led them to perhaps think that maybe we should side with Russia, that maybe there is a threat to our lives. And, you know, it shows you that as part of, you know, what you want to call modern Russian warfare, there's a lot of different names for it, hybrid warfare, gray zone warfare, but an instrumental part of this new type of warfare is the ability to not only fight for control over land and terrain, is to fight for control of people's minds. And Russia is able to be much more effective with its weapons, with its bombs, with its artillery, with its rifles, because it can also distort people's perception of the truth. And that's an incredibly powerful weapon.
The story that you told me, it's so funny yet so scary. And actually, how can people believe that? And, you know, I'm from Lugansk, and all my family is from there, so this topic concerns me personally a lot. Actually, I remember talking to my grandma who lived there a few years ago about her political beliefs, and I was truly stunned that she supported Ukraine so much, despite the fact that all her neighbors and friends actually didn't. And she said, like, well, I don't have cable TV, meaning that they had only Russian news that are spreading lies, like the recent Putin's interview where he called himself a peacekeeper. The Soviet Union has collapsed, and the idea of socialist utopia and communism collapsed. Yet Russia today is still trying to desperately to convince people around the world in their lies. By the way, I'm reading a book by Peter Pomerantsev called This Is Not Propaganda. You already read it before. And in this book, he explains how it works, the propaganda, I mean. And the new information for me was that Russia uses the same tactics in Estonia, for example, too, saying that Estonia is a part of Russia. So it's incredible. What do you think are some ways to tackle the effectiveness of propaganda? And I know your brother and you founded a non-profit organization a few years ago and even raised money for people in Donbass and bought them TVs. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so to tackle propaganda, there's a few different ways to talk about this. But to your last question, so yes, in 2015 and 16, my younger brother, Drew, and I created a nonprofit to assist people caught in war zones around the world. And our first project was here in Ukraine. And so one of the problems we uncovered here in Ukraine, like I said earlier, at the beginning of the war, Russia established information dominance over the Donbass by destroying Ukraine's ability to transmit TV and radio signals to the eastern part of the country. And so a lot of those people who were living in the occupied zone were receiving nothing but Russian propaganda, but also people living on the Ukrainian side of the front lines too. They did not have access to Ukrainian information. And so their minds were being shaped by the constant barrage of Russian disinformation. And my brother and I visited these refugee centers along the front lines. Many of them were old kindergartens or schools that had been converted into places where refugees from the war could live. And we went to one place and we actually funded a landline cable connection to this facility and then bought TVs and iPads so that these people who had been displaced from their homes in the war zone now had access to Ukrainian information, Ukrainian TV news, Ukrainian internet, to be able to access Ukrainian news sites that way. But primarily for some of the older people, watching news on TV is like their primary way of information. So it was really important that they could turn on the TV and get Ukrainian news channels. And so I think, one way to combat propaganda is to diversify the news sources that people have, to which people have access,
mm-hmm.
right? If you only get your news from one place, you're not going to have different viewpoints on reality with which to have a more complete and accurate picture of the world. So I think one issue my brother and I were trying to address was to not allow Russia to dominate these people's minds by having complete control over their information sources. In this day and age, though, the power of modern Russian propaganda is not so much that they can convince you of a lie. It's the fact that they convince you that there is no truth at all. And so in social media, you see these, I can only describe it as like an information blitzkrieg, where you see so many competing versions of the truth that a lot of people don't know what to believe anymore. They don't know what truth is. There is no objective truth. There's a kind of a word of art that's been floated around a lot in the last few years. They call it the post-truth era.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm just curious to ask you why we should and why people should believe you or not some Ukrainian experts in Washington, D.C., for example, who say that Ukraine is not a real country.
Well, I think that leads into another point, which is, to combat propaganda, it takes both the efforts of governments and organizations to present the truth, but it also is going to take, and this might take a generation or two, but it takes educated media consumers who are willing to diversify their sources, who are willing to perhaps not believe the first thing that shows up on their Facebook or Instagram feed, right? People who are going to be picky about the information they choose to believe. So I would present myself as somebody who has, for example, the war in Ukraine, has been here for 7.5 years. I've lived in this country. I have a track record of objective professional journalism. So for a media consumer, I imagine they would examine my body of work, my track record, my reputation, and say, okay, this journalist is somebody who I can reasonably trust to give me objective, truthful information. I'm going to read his stories or watch his videos and see what he has to say. Whereas an outfit like Russia Today, RT, that's a Russian government-funded outfit which is presenting the Kremlin's point of view as part of their global
yes,
you know, campaign to distort the truth, particularly about what's going on here in Ukraine. So I think that media consumers need to be educated. And that maybe in America or in Ukraine or any country around the world, that's something that should be taught in schools as you grow up. You know, they teach you to look both ways before you cross the street. Well, maybe they should teach you to look both ways before you repost something on Facebook or Twitter, to understand that we all have a stake in not promoting, spreading fake information. And, you know, I think that social media advanced faster than our ability to understand the ways in which it can be manipulated, just like atomic energy. You know, we just discovered the power of splitting the atom, and immediately we made a weapon out of it. Well, the same thing with the power of social media. Russia immediately weaponized that for its use. And to segue back to the journalism profession a little bit, back in the day, so traditionally up until about, you know, maybe 30 years ago, 20 years ago, there was a very, you know, the role of journalists, you call them gatekeepers or watchdogs. Mm-hmm. And so journalists, professional journalists, were a filter of sorts that we were sort of a protection or a shield against outright lies being transmitted to civilian populations, because an information had to transmit itself through journalists to get to the audience. Well, now a country like Russia or China has direct access to the populations around the world without the filter of journalism institutions to weed out the propaganda, to weed out the lies. And so now Russia has a direct portal into the brains of people in the United States through Facebook, through Twitter, without journalists acting as watchdogs or gatekeepers of that information. And it's a dangerous time. And in particular, I think a lot of people, particularly in the West, have lost faith in journalism.
Yeah.
And that contributes, I think, to people just not knowing who to trust. And so at the end of the day, people just go with what feels emotionally correct, which information makes you feel better, what information corresponds to your view of the world. And so that, unfortunately, is a liability and is a vulnerability for democracies.
Could you describe some steps where we need to go in our education, how to educate yourself, how to understand what is fake news and what is not? What do you think about that?
Right. Well, that's a very, I'd say, difficult and controversial subject, because obviously to combat propaganda,
you have to have different sources at least, right?
Absolutely. And there's two sort of directions you can come at this problem, right? One is outlets like Facebook and Twitter moderate the information on their own. But that's dangerous to get into, because then the political persuasions, the political opinions, the leanings of people at Facebook and Twitter, that can shape the information sphere as well. You also have to rely on consumers of information from the other direction to be discerning, to be picky, like I said, about which information they choose to believe. Yeah, I don't think there's an easy answer for any of this.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, too, you know, the problem is already there. And people already gravitate towards news sources that confirm their pre-existing biases, their pre-existing opinions about the world. And not many people are willing to consider that maybe they've been wrong all along about what they think how they think the world is working. And to, you know, if you're very conservative and you like Fox News, you know, why would you go on CNN and consider that maybe all your political opinions are wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to do that. They want to go to a news source that's going to confirm the way they feel about the world.
Maybe you could say how you personally check news. How do you define fake news or not?
Well, I personally try to diversify my news sources. So, you know, going to sites that have different political leanings, right and left, and hopefully the truth
right
is sort of intersecting somewhere in the middle. I always tend to prefer news sources that rely on reporting that is firsthand. So, you know, when I look at my reporting for Ukraine, for example,
Nothing new.
Yeah, like, you know, you if you are physically in a place with your feet on the ground in a country, it allows you to report more accurately on what's going on, as opposed to sitting in some newsroom in Washington, D.C., going on Google to report on Ukraine. Because when you rely on third-party sourcing, you are exposing yourself to the possibility that propaganda, that disinformation, is making its way into your version, your interpretation of the truth, right?
Sure.
And so it's really important to seek out sources that are not relying on third-party information, that are written by people, by journalists who are where they are at, reporting on things firsthand, relying on firsthand accounts. But, you know, again, that requires a lot of effort on the media consumer. And at this stage, it's going to take a long time and a lot of education for people to change their habits, to change their laziness, probably with the news they consume.
It's quite hard to weigh, and people usually.
I mean, back in the 60s and 70s in America, for example, there were probably three main news TV shows every night. Everybody would you know, you get back from work, you get home, you turn on the news, and at 6 o'clock you watch the news broadcast from like CBS, ABC, NBC, right? And so everybody had access to the same information, but you can choose how you interpret that information based on your political bias, right? Well, now we go to news sources that align with our political bias already. And so sometimes people live in different universes and they perceive things in totally different ways. And you can see that in America right now with the way people are interpreting the possibility of a larger Russian attack against Ukraine. You know, you have some voices on the right in America who are saying, you know, why shouldn't we be on Russia's side in this? Or why, you know, NATO is expanding and threatening Russia. And they're repeating these Russian propaganda lines as if there's any validity to them, because Russian propaganda has inserted itself into the American political discourse.
Got it. Well, actually, I graduated, my major in university was journalism, so I truly believe that we should support investigative journalism and improve digital literacy among the general public. Actually, what do you think about modern media technology that makes citizens more vulnerable to weaponized information? Like, have you heard about this Olgina bot farm, for example?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it just goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, often when we think about propaganda, we think about sort of the simplest version of it, right? Which is just saying a lie. And it's like that old expression, you know, you say a lie enough, people will believe it as the truth. Well, I think that, you know, the power of social media and the fact that we are always have smartphones on us nowadays is not so much that, like I said, it's not so much the power to make us believe a lie. It's just the power to just to make us jaded and to think that there's no such thing as the truth, or to cloud the truth so much that people just give up and just don't care. And so I think that, you know, the vulnerability and the threat of social media is the fact that there is an unguarded access of malicious actors like Russia and China to put out so much misinformation that people just give up on seeking out the truth. And then, like, we say it's up to the media consumer at the end of the day to have the wherewithal to understand which news sources to choose and how to cross-check their information and all these things. But, you know, Russia and China can make that a really hard task to do. They can put out so many competing versions of the truth that people don't even know where to start. Mm. And it's sort of an insurmountable problem. I think a great example of this is when the Malaysian airliner, MH17, Boeing 777, yeah, you know, jumbo jet was shot down over eastern Ukraine, yeah, by a Russian missile operated by a Russian crew within Russian occupied, fired within Russian occupied territory. But immediately after that plane was shot down and 298 innocent people were killed, Russia started putting out fake information immediately. First, you know, it's a Ukrainian fighter jet, an Su-25, that shot down the plane. And then there's this fabricated story that the CIA had taken an empty plane and filled it with dead bodies and blown it up over eastern Ukraine to fake this catastrophe, to blame it on Russia. And you had all these just absolutely mind-bogglingly absurd alternative stories that just clouded the media space to the point where the truth was hidden. It's like one grain of sand on a beach of lies, right? And so for people who, media consumers, who maybe they're willing to invest the time to try and find the truth, it just makes it really hard because there's so many lies to sift through to find the truth in the end. And that's what, you know, that's Russia. When it comes to regular warfare, Russia has a tactic called area warfare, right? And so they take one piece of land and they just kill everything inside of it. If they're trying to kill one house, they'll kill a whole village. And that's what they would do with information too, is they just pump so many lies out there that you can't find the truth through the lies. And I think that when you talk about modern media technology mm-hmm. and the fact that we all have access to social media, and like I said, there's not that filter of a few foundational sort of stalwart news organizations that can act as gatekeepers for information any longer. You know, I think that makes us all vulnerable to disinformation. And I'll go back on this, it's up to us, but at the same time, it makes it really hard when there's so much information, disinformation out there and so many lies that we have to have the judgment to evaluate.
Oh, yeah. And you already read Pomerantsev's book as me, and actually I've read about this Olgin bot farm. Do you know how they work, actually?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very cynical operation, right? They just take young Russians, they go there and sit there all day, and I'll tell you my stories. Every time I put up a video or an article or I put something on Twitter, you know, the bots come out in force to discredit.
Really?
They discredit me.
To your Twitter?
Oh, yeah. And they will discredit my stories. They will discredit me. It happens. Log on to one of my videos on YouTube, for example, and you'll just see the comments. Like, the comments will start off with people, oh, great report. Uh-huh. Thank you for reporting the truth in Ukraine. And then once the Russian bot farms find out about this, the Internet Research Agency, right?
So they are attacking you.
Oh, yes. And not just my reporting, but me personally, accusing me of being all sorts of horrible things that I won't repeat on a podcast. But, you know, they try to devalue me as a journalist. If, like I said earlier, I think one of my assets as a journalist is my reputation, the fact that I've been here for so long, my desire to uphold the truth. And so one way to belittle my work is to try and attack me, to bring down my reputation. So you see it all the time. But that's, you know, like I said, information, there's the old saying that information is the first casualty of war. Well, in this age of information warfare, you know, information is a weapon of choice for Russia in a lot of ways. And so people who tell the truth, who present stories and information that is harmful to Russia's cause, you're a target. And they will try to demean your work in order to mm-hmm. silence your voice.
Interesting, Nolan, that's really the fact that you are trying to bring that... The fact that they are trying to bring you down means that your work matters, actually.
Absolutely.
I mean, hate.
Yes. You know, there's a great saying by Winston Churchill is like, oh, you have enemies? Good. It means you stand for something. And so I see that, you know, the more anger I arouse from the Russian bots, from the Russians in general, it means that my work is, I'm getting closer to the truth, right?
Oh, yeah.
The closer you get to the sun, the hotter it is. And so I think that, for me, it's a sign that my work means something when they obviously see it as a threat. Because, you know, I think one thing that Americans really get wrong about Russia in particular is this idea that wars begin when bullets are fired. Well, Russia declared war in the United States a long time ago, and it's an information war. It's a cyber war right now, and it's being fought over the internet through the airwaves. So I think we need to wake up to that fact. And journalists who are on the front lines of this information war have a very valuable duty. And I think it's an honor for me to have the chance to defend the truth.
Yeah, exactly. I think to prevent targeted attacks against the most vulnerable, we must create regulations and policies that protect minority classes from online manipulation. Okay, thank you, Nolan. And let's maybe sum up and give some advices to our audience how to prevent the propaganda, how to understand it, maybe some advices from your side. Some wishes.
Well, first of all, follow my work on Ukraine. Read my articles.
Got
watch
it.
My videos. But yes, I think, you know, if you're gonna do anything in this life, whether you're gonna get married and join a gym, find a job, you do your research. You do your due diligence ahead of time, right? You have to be discerning. If you're gonna go, you know, if you're going to eat some, pick out some food in the grocery store, you read the nutrition. You see how many calories.
So I think
we should treat information the same way as we treat these other parts of our lives, because information is harmful. It's harmful to us as individuals. Disinformation and lies are harmful to our relationships with our family and friends. I know in America, many friendships, many families have been ripped apart because people believe alternate realities of the truth. And information, disinformation is ultimately harmful for our societies or democracies. And it's up to all of us. I mean, the fundamental sort of tenet of a democracy is the fact that we all have a say in our governments. We're all responsible for the success of our society. And right now, our societies are under attack by disinformation. And just the way that Ukrainians right now are willing to go out there and defend every square meter of their land from a potential Russian invasion, all of us should have the same courage to defend every single brain cell of ours against lies and propaganda coming through the internet. It's up to all of us. It's a war we are all fighting. And ultimately, we will all either enjoy the success of this fight or we will suffer the consequences if we allow this information to destroy our societies and destroy ourselves as individuals.
Great talk. Thank you, Nolan.
Thank you for having me.
Dear followers, you have listened to the 6th episode of Curly PR. Please let me know what you think about it, and do not forget to leave me a rating and review, as it really helps other people find this podcast. Also, if you're interested in PR and marketing, I recommend you to check out other podcasts related to this topic on NV Podcast. If you do have any guest suggestions, please don't hesitate to find me on social media as Nastya Papandopoulos. It's been an absolute pleasure spending time with you, Nolan. See you soon.
See you.